I've seen a lot of what I like to call monodramas. So why would you ever consider writing a book, or would it have to be something that went on stage?
I should tell you the reason why I came, why I'm doing this in the first place.
That's the other thing too.
It's because one relates to the other. I married a Canadian, and I'm from England originally, but mm-hmm. I was living in New York, and we had to choose a country. And my father came here in the 1950s, and he loved Canada. And I grew up with things Canadian, like Canadian Club whiskey, mm-hmm. which he drank, and with Canada Dry and slice of orange, and Canadian Christmases,
mm-hmm.
which was very unusual, because nobody put lights outside their home in England.
Oh, that's true.
And he took them. We always had lights and huge trees, and he fell in love with Christmas. So I got a lot to thank Canada for, because the rest of the year he was a Puritan. He didn't spend a lot of money, but Christmas came along and he would go crazy. So we decided to come to Canada, the immigration process for Canada for a resident is that you have to name everywhere you've lived, everywhere you worked, and everywhere you've traveled from the age of 18. Now, mm-hmm. as a professional actor, I've never stopped moving, and I've been mm-hmm. lucky with working, and I've done a lot of traveling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge ordeal to remember everything, and a lot of it were things that I'd deliberately forgotten. And so I wrote a blog, as it called... I've forgotten the name of the blog, but it was an entry in the blog, and the blog was called Strolling Player. And I wrote down these memories as they came, and it was just a short blog. And then I was asked to do a reading in Brandt and Simcoe.
Okay.
Two ships.
Right.
And say, come and read some Shakespeare and mm-hmm. you know, whatever, you know. And I said, well, what do you think about me reading some of these stories and integrating it with, you know, some Shakespeare or speeches? And they said, fine. And then as I was reading them, it soon became apparent to me that reading wasn't going to do it, that I had to perform it.
These roles were written for the stage.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the piece is really about a celebration of life, hopefully, and theatre. Because theatre is where I started.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Right.
And my parents were actors. So it's about being an actor, but about life as an actor. And theatre, a celebration of theatre, which is hard to describe unless you go. But, you know, and these days, but it's certainly important.
I think it is. I think the collective experience is very important.
Right.
And theater, because it's live, and the audience is different every night, the energy is different every night, which makes it that much more exciting for an actor. Especially when you're doing a one-person show, or what I like to call a monodrama. But then in this case, it's probably both, I would guess. But does it change for you every night when you do the show?
Yes. Yes, every night, every show changes, and that's the great thing. And it is the great thing is working with the energies. I mean, because every audience has a different energy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what they're surprised about is these days it's very hard for people to hear a natural voice. Voices are coming over a lot of the mics and speakers and film, but the power of a voice on its own in a space has an incredible energy of its own, and to have control of that, control an audience by what you do with your voice, is a craft, but it's also very exciting for the audience, because the energy with the great actors like Chris Plummer,
mm-hmm.
what he does with his voice, or Richard Burton, what he did with it, that they can lift a theatre up into the air with some of the stuff they do. So that's, you know, it's an art form that needs to be preserved, and also, you know, to realize that, you know, it's not the big theaters that you, it's theatres that are, I mean, a lot of theatres in the UK are great because they can take theatres that you take an audience that are, you know, 800, but they get them close enough to the stage that you never need mics. There are no mics in England. I don't think there are too many here, but they're in the States.
I think the big shows are mic'd. I don't. I've seen shows at the Studio Theatre in Stratford, but I'm not sure those are mic'd or not, because it only holds 250 people.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe not.
But only musicals in England are mic'd.
Okay.
They don't mic them. As far as the people who never admit they do. But when I did a lot of touring in the States, and it's very hard, you know, big theatres, because they're multi-purpose, so a lot of the times you had to be mic'd, and you know, there are not many theatres that are in the States that you can go to that aren't, and that includes Broadway, you know, which is a shame.
Yeah, the audience, I guess they're used to it, and the sound is, and the audience is growing, you know, literally growing older, so
sure.
There's a problem with hearing. And
yeah.
Can you tell the listeners about you've done some of the greatest roles in the Shakespearean canon. You've done, and this is, I can't think of the last time we interviewed someone that's done Benedict, and Much Ado About Nothing, Claudio in Hamlet, Prospero in The Tempest, both the Dromios in Comedy of Errors, Malvolio in Twelfth Night, Iago in Othello,
yeah.
Thank you, and the Friar in Romeo and Juliet. So, as someone who writes about playwrights, what is it about Shakespeare? Now, I've talked to a lot of actors. What is it that makes him so timeless? Why is it every time I ask an actor who his favorite playwright, why would they have a tendency to say Shakespeare?
Well, it's universal. It doesn't grow old. He's as was said, you know, in the book, he's a playwright for all time. And the words are brilliant to say. They're beautiful, beautiful words. Nobody's really come close to being able to put the, you know, those feelings and life into those magical words. And he makes it easy for the actor. It's a very easy thing to say and to remember, because he was an actor, and so he knows how actors work. And you know, and it's rhythm. It's it has that heartbeat underneath it, which makes it easier. And it has a power that you know, it's just tremendous stuff to say. I mean, all playwrights have their own rhythm, but he's true. He has tremendous. I mean, it's you know, and he's a great equivocator. He never preaches to anyone. He just says, This is the way it is. This is what we all feel, don't we? But he says it in the most beautiful way.
You've also done Mamet, which is, and Albie, which I found both very musical.
Yeah. Mamet is the hardest thing. He was the hardest I found to learn. And Albie too, but Mamet is so particular about those interruptions, you know. You know, the dot 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 that he puts in, and the, you know, you have to get
the
exactly
timing
right.
Yeah, that's why I'm standing here going, you're the range of your work is absolutely astonishing. Let's talk a little bit about Strolling Player. Can you tell people kind of about the structure? Not exactly the show, but I kind of have an idea the structure of it. How the show, like, is it a narrative? Is it a dialogue? How does this work?
Well, it's narrative with drama that is a kaleidoscope of memories.
Nothing
basically,
good, yeah.
And it's memories through an actor remembering his life, and also the plays that he's done. Now, that actor could be me,
or
may not be me, but a memory
yeah.
is, as we know, it could be the truth. It may be the truth, but it may not be close. But it's the plays that he's done, and they seep in through the scene. Some are characterizations, but some are just thrown in to the narrative, and there's stories that are patchwork together. and they're linked in such a way that hopefully it's heightened theatrically. That's but about an actor, about a strolling a player, as we were called, you know, and we were called strolling players because nobody would have us in one place. They would say, "Keep."
You'd always have to keep moving on.
You keep moving.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. When you between roles,
yeah.
life experience sort of jumps in there, or is there. And have you ever reprised a role? And have you found that something that's happened to you between the roles has had a major impact with how you play the role a second time?
That's a very good question. I don't think that has happened. I don't think I've had. I mean, I'd love to do Macbeth again.
Mm.
I did when I was young. And
you
I think
started off as young Macduff, which is, you know.
Yeah, when I was six.
Which is not,
true.
You know, it's a very, you know, it's a heavy role for
yeah.
a little boy to play.
I think certainly,
you know?
Yeah, certainly with certain ages, you know, that you come back to, that you could, you know, I'd love to do, yeah, I'd probably like to do George and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf again.
Ah, now did that, now I've talked to other Georges, I've talked to Peter Donaldson when he played George.
Uh-huh.
Now did that seep into your real life? Because he said no, he was fine, thank you very much, but does it seep into your, like
I can't remember drinking anymore, you know. Used to, I had to remember the lines. I was too. It was, but I know the actress playing Martha was very. She was very method.
Okay.
Actress.
Oh
and,
God.
And so I didn't quite know when reality began and the play began. But it was, yes. All the concentration was on the play. It was just enough to be able to get through it. But you know, it's what a play.
It's like a musical quartet.
It is.
It's amazing.
And I've done both parts.
Oh, George and Nick.
Yeah.
Oh,
I was
God.
Totally wrong for Nick because he's supposed to be blonde. And but I yes, I did both parts. So that's quite unusual too.
That yeah. is. And then you were working with Harvey
Firestein
for a Torsong trilogy.
Yeah.
You know, you said Anthony Scher. So I mean, if you were around. You have this osmosis. You probably got this osmosis from. And it starts when you're young. Peter Sellers, Richard Burton,
mm-hmm.
and then Harvey Firestein, and then Anthony Scher, you know. And I'm thinking, I saw a clip of you as John in Oleana. I'm pretty sure you could turn right around and play, you know, Frank in Educating Rita without
well,
a problem.
Well, they always say, you know, when people come up to you, they say, well, what kind of actor are you? What do you do? Well, I'm an actor.
Yeah.
But they,
yeah.
you know, well, do you do Shakespeare? Well, I do Shakespeare. But you'd ask, you'd probably ask any actor at Stratford and they'll say the same thing. You know, I'm an actor. I do commercials.
Yeah,
I'll do
yeah.
television. I play characters.
Mm-hmm.
I say in the, I'm talking too much now because I'm probably very nervous, but
You're nervous?
I say in the play
God.
That the reason I do it is because I can hide it now, but I was very shy and reticent as a child. And what I love is escaping
mm-hmm.
into the characters. And I think a lot of actors are like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they are the ones that I admire, are the ones that the magic comes from becoming or unlocking someone else. You talk about Tony Scher, who's a great example. He was called monastic because
mm-hmm.
he would go into
mm-hmm.
the detail and actually the research into the characters is part of the fun, is that you'd get to discover all these different worlds that you probably would never get close to before, and then you have to work out the psychology of the character too. It's a drug, you know.
It is. I've done some theater in my time. I know it's like having the center spot shine on you. Were doing Linda Lohman from Death of a Salesman, and
mm-hmm.
it's the last speech when she's in the graveyard, and you got 500 people watching, and there's nothing like it. It's like it's a total drug. Let me think here. When you were writing this, did you have a hard time honing it down into, like, how long is the show, basically?
It's 90 minutes.
Okay.
Without an interval.
Which makes sense, because I don't think I've ever seen a one-act show and that's more than 90 minutes. Because that's hard on the actor.
It's hard on the actor and hard on the audience, to be perfectly frank. And I tried it, first of all, with an interval, but it seems to work better without,
mm-hmm.
and going all the way through. My wife is a writer and an editor, which was very
useful. Oh, good.
So what I had a lot of help from her. A lot of it, I wanted to put the stories with speeches, so with,
mm-hmm.
with plays
from,
that I've been involved in.
That's
and,
what I'm guessing.
And so she helped a great deal in editing it, and she co-wrote it, really, and bringing all the speeches into the stories. And so which play, which character could...
Which character
would go with
this
story.
Yeah.
And so that's how we honed it down and got it into shape.
You've done television
mm-hmm.
and film too,
mm-hmm.
between the three. So what? How do they all? You've probably been asked this question before, I'm sure. TV is sort of more condensed, maybe.
In the
method, yeah, in the process.
Yeah, I mean, TV is basically you just have to think it. You don't
mm-hmm.
have to project anything. So you just have to be. So you're bringing everything in. That you know, and I'm always, you know, I did a lot of TV when I started I was a child actor, basically,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, 13 up to 23, I did nothing but TV and film,
mm-hmm.
and so I had a lot of
experience. British television at that, which
mm-hmm.
is a lot different than Canadian television.
Yeah, and the other thing is you know, that you a huge amount of distractions.
Yeah.
And these days, you get two takes to do it.
Yeah.
If you're doing a third take, people start to get a little...
And it's television's money. That's
the
other thing.
Exactly.
It's money.
So it's being able to keep the concentration. And you know, somebody like Daniel Day-Lewis, who gets a lot of flack for staying in character. Well, he's right. Of course, he should stay in character. It's the easiest thing to do.
Yeah,
because you could
be
hanging around for 3-5 hours, and they'll suddenly say, "Go, be."
And you can't just jump into it.
No.
I guess the same in film as well, because film is kind of hurry up and wait.
Film is the same, more so probably in film.
So I'm guessing that theatre is probably your favourite because it's more immediate.
Theatre is where I started, so that will always be my favourite. But it's not to say that, I mean, I do love TV and film.
Mm-hmm.
I love being in the places and working with a crew. There's a different,
mm-hmm.
there's still an energy working with a film crew and with a camera that is... It's working with energies
different type of energies.
Yeah.
You jump and you're right between three places all the time, so I guess your life is pretty hectic. So
yeah, it can be.
I'm guessing Rachel saw you in Stratford.
She did.
How did this? How did she manage to get you to come here to do this amazing show and a masterclass, which we're coming to as well?
Well. She came to Stratford and we talked after the show, and she talked about the studio, so I came to the studio and we talked about putting it on, and I liked the space and I liked her, and also she brought along some people, some of her people, the students who,
mm-hmm.
who were involved in the theatre, and we talked, and I fell in love with them. I mean, they were just tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided that, I mean, when I was in the States, I worked for a company, and we toured a lot around universities, and I used to give a lot of masterclasses and workshops, so it's something that I've done in the past, and I asked them whether they'd be interested, and they said yes, so it seemed a good way to do a masterclass and then maybe come see the show afterwards and see what they thought, and then we can, you know, they'd have a fuller experience maybe of
what
of
it's
actor
like.
And theatre, and some of them are in, you know, maybe embarking on it themselves,
yep.
or interested in theatre, and it's, you know, it's useful to have someone who's been around a bit and who can maybe
give them an idea,
give them
some
idea
insight
from
yeah.
you know their perspectives.
What is it like for, if there's any drama students listening from U of W, what's a master class?
Well, I don't know why it's called a master class, really. I mean, it could be called a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a, and I don't even say it's teaching. What actors used to do is before drama schools, directors, well, how they used to learn was they learned from older actors. So the older actors would say, yeah, you know, what you should do is this. And if they would listen, which they're wise, they would. And so that's how it was passed on. And that's what I do. I just pass on what I think And it's a way in, you know, and it's like going onto the internet. I mean, it's there are many ways to do it, and it's all personal. But if you can, if they, they'll come and they'll take what works for them, and hopefully they'll get something out of it, you know.
There we go. Something just went on. Oh, I think you pressed a button.
I didn't. No, it's this.
That's not Charlie Chaplin thing. No, it's this.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
Speaking of technology.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, that's great. When you're doing the masterclass and when you're doing Strolling Claire for the audiences, what would you like them to take from it as they leave the theater? What would you like them to, what's the word, glean from it?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard because I've had people, the people who've come that seem to enjoy it, and they've come and they seem to be there's something in the because it's a story and everyone's got a personal story.
Yeah, that's right.
And these are many stories and they link together, but there's a through theme, which is, you know, which is me.
Right.
Which in everyone, there is a me.
Yeah.
There is a
me in this repertoire.
And there's,
I'm in there.
Like everyone else, and everyone else, if they can relate in some way
mm-hmm.
to those stories and feel less alone, or because the stories, there's some, you know, dreadful things or things you're not proud of that are in there, and just to be, you know, to feel that they're not alone, or that somebody thinks the way they are. Sometimes going into theatre isn't, you know, well thought of. I don't know. I'm not. Hopefully, in the masterclass, it's also something that will help them in. Not just theatre or acting,
but in life itself.
In life.
Yeah.
Like one of the things I've said around when I was talking to them is, you know, what is the best advice that I was given and as an actor, and it was to stay in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay in the mm-hmm. moment and you don't look forward and you don't look back, you can never be afraid. Which is you know, great for an actor, but also great for life too.
Very true.
Yeah.
So. This is happening October 27th?
Saturday, October 27th.
At 8 o'clock
at
the Kaufman Arts Studio. Richard, do you have a favorite... First of all, do you have a favorite role or a favorite speech that stays with you? And do you have a favorite piece of music that I can call up?
The favorite role. I always say the favorite role is a bit like asking, you know, who your favorite girlfriend is. You're always going to say it's the one you're with at the time. So I don't really have a favorite role. Prospero in The Tempest
mm-hmm.
is one of my favorites, because he's a father with a daughter, and being a father with daughters, I relate to that very much. And favorite piece of music, any Mozart or anything. I've got eclectic tastes, so it can be jazz.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll put on a little bit of Mozart. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for coming to this, to the studio. This has been amazing. It's such a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you for having me.
And I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
With what you're doing, I think you're doing. What are you doing next? You're doing.
I'm actually. I've just done a
docudrama.
Yeah, I've just done a docudrama, Dangerous Persuasions.
Yeah.
That
looks really interesting.
Yeah, it's a co-production with the UK, and it's shot over here, and. Ours was all about Scientology, which was very interesting. And then, at the end of the year, I'm off to the Folger Theatre in Washington, D.C.
What are you doing?
Doing Henry V. I'm going to do Henry V there.
What are you playing?
Well, it's difficult. I'm playing the chorus and other things, and but the way the director is setting it up is, I think the chorus is the way into the play.
Okay.
So after that in March I'm coming back to do a Stephen Massacre play called The Clockmakers, Canadian playwright, up in Sudbury, Northern Ontario.
Okay.
So
I will watch for you.
Thank you.
I'll watch for you on the internet, and I wish you all the best. I'll keep an eye on what you're doing here in Canada, and I want to wish you all the best, and thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.